Hello and welcome back to What Do You Know For Sure podcast. In this conversation, I am speaking with my friend Elaine Ray. This is a powerful, emotional, perhaps difficult conversation. We are talking about misogyny and the fact that it is a hate crime and that things need to change. The notion that there is a war on women. And Elaine actually calls out that war. She says it is a war. I declare it a war. And Elaine shares something that she's never shared publicly in 32 years, talking about the brutal murder of her mother by a man 32 years ago, which is also when my mum died, but in very, very different circumstances, even though they died streets and weeks apart from each other, being the same age as well. So this is a big conversation that is important, I think, to listen to. It's important to witness. And for me, certainly, it's important that this conversation hopefully sparks other conversations in other people's lives, in other people's worlds and their circles, because this is a conversation we need to have. It can male violence against women, misogyny running through our society and through our lives is something that must change. And I believe that it can only change when a light is shone on it. So please listen to this. Please listen again and please share it, because this is a really important thing said in here that people need to hear. Elaine, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
You're welcome. I'm delighted to be here.
And it's always good to talk to you. I'm so enjoying seeing you on my screen. Tell us a wee bit about you.
Okay, so a wee bit about me. I'm a working class woman originally from Govan in Glasgow, went to school in Govan in Glasgow. Like many people, went through many journeys in my life to get to where I am today.
Great, fantastic. What do you know for sure, Elaine?
Okay, the things that I had a wee think about this, because you had spoke to me about it before I come on, and I thought one of the things that I know for sure is that misogyny should be a hate crime, and it's not yet. Mm-hmm. The history to that for me is quite complicated, but I'm sure we'll get into it as the call moves on. But specifically for me, I am an adult survivor of my mother being murdered when I was a young woman.
Yeah, and I know that that's because we've spoken about that before, and I know that especially we're recording this in late March 2021, and so there's been a lot about that in the media just now because a young woman was murdered last week. And actually, as you know, I messaged you because I think I could recognise that you would have been really triggered by that. So tell us more about what it means for you, about what you're sharing okay. here.
So you did send me a little text about Sarah Everard, the 33-year-old young woman who was walking home at 9 o'clock in the evening from a friend's in London and was abducted and murdered. Very sadly, during COVID, there are many, many women who have been triggered by this, not just me, and I'm sure not just survivors. So what I know for sure is things have to change. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to think about how we raise our sons. We have to think about male violence. My mother was murdered 32 years ago, and it is horrific for me that I have to wake up to these types of news stories, and that 32 years on, nothing has changed. Women still are frightened. The safety of women feeling unprotected by institutions like the police. I mean, a police officer has been accused of this young woman's murder. These types of institutions that are there to help women. Women's safety, again, is in the news as a major, major concern. And I'm raising two adult daughters. And for me, the fact that 32 years on after my own mother's murder, that they would have to face the same challenges and legacy as I have as a woman, it just breaks my heart. I'm weary. I'm weary about it. I'm weary that a third of women will experience domestic abuse. I'm weary that twice as many women during lockdown have been killed in the first few weeks as they were the same time last year, and that one woman is killed every 3 days in this country by men they know, predominantly in their own homes. 500,000 rapes are sexually assaulted every year, and less prosecutions round about that because we're underfunding that type of work. But what I know for sure is it needs to change. What I'm not sure about is what we do to change it, how we stop it, and how we can raise men differently.
Yeah. I mean, see, when you talk about the word misogyny, and like you, we're a pair of very proud Govan feminists. We can happily label ourselves like that. So I do get what you mean by misogyny, but I think it's one of these terms that gets spoken in what is misogynistic and what is not. And it's such a... Everybody's got a different opinion on what's misogynistic behaviour and what's not. So how do we start to define what is misogyny, and how do we help, have you got a thought on it, how do we help other women to understand that is complete misogyny and you know, stand against that? Have you got a thought
you're right to say that, and there's probably a spectrum of what misogyny is, from, you know, young men watching pornography that's really violence against young women and children a lot of the time, and being fed a diet of that, and much more accessible to it now than they ever were, to the other end of the scale, which I'm talking about for myself today, which is the hatred of women, where you would abduct and murder and take a life of a woman. You know, I think that's, for me, the ultimate price of misogyny is a society where women... lives are not held of the same value, where women don't feel they can safely go out, where they have to watch their every move, think about how they dress, how they speak, who they speak to. You know, these men have, you know, that have taken women's lives are one end of that scale. But what I want to know is, where are the voices of the men who have mothers and grandmothers and sisters and daughters and aunties and cousins that are women? Where are their voices in this? You know, I know that growing up for my daughters, my husband had to take a stand on this as a feminist father, to challenge himself and his power, so that they were empowered by him giving up some of that. So for me, misogyny is about challenging your preconceptions about women, challenging your beliefs that we are, you know, lesser beings, unworthy of the same care and attention and safety. You know, if men are charged with murder in this country and they're given life, the man that was given life for the murder of my mother, he was given life and he never served. He served under 10 years, you know, for that particular sentence that he done. But my family went on to live that life sentence. I'm still living that life sentence. My daughters were raised without a grandmother. My nieces and nephews were raised without a grandmother because of one man's actions. So for me, misogyny is about the hatred of women, or, you know, the despising of women, or the seeing women as second-class citizens and not treating them as equals.
Mm. So, I mean, the way you talk about this, it's been a long 32 years for you. And the way you're talking, I was going to say, do you think it's got better? But clearly you don't think it's got that much better. But what is, I suppose, therefore, your vision for the future? What's your hope for the future? And how do we get to a better place? You know, what do you hope we get to for your daughters, for your granddaughters?
Not yet born yet. Uh-huh. If I'm ever lucky enough to be a grandmother. But I think the thing for me is I want to have those dialogues. I want men to be spearing up those dialogues. I want men to be challenging other men's abuse and violence. I want them to call it out. You know, I would like women to continue the dialogue, to be having that dialogue with men and saying, look, this is how it feels to walk down a street and you're walking 2 yards behind me in the dark. This is how it feels to go out and be worried that my skirt's too short or my top's too low cut, or, you know, any of those things that make you feel vulnerable, or that you've got to be responsible for the safety of all women, you know, rather than men taking responsibility for their own conduct and behaviour. Constantly seeing women have to respond to that. Nicola Sturgeon, our First Minister, you know, has spent the last 6 weeks having to defend her actions about taking a stand against, you know, Alex Salmond's behaviour around about women, whether he was held responsible in a court of law or not. You know, he admitted his conduct was less than shiny bright. Women are being asked what is their opinion all the time about men's behaviour, but why is it our responsibility? So for me in the future, I would like sons, I would like men to be raised in a different way, or as Gloria Steinem, very famous American feminist, would say, raise your daughters more like sons and your sons more like daughters. Well, for me, that's about seeing sons that recognise it's not okay. And if your pals are being really sexist and chauvinist, they, you know, call it out. You know, if we girls are still being told in this day and age that they can't be anything they want to be because they were born with a vagina, then there's something wrong with that. We need to start calling it out. We need to see that actually the world's a better place if women are equals. What women bring to the table, what women bring to relationships matters. Relationships being taught in schools matters. No stuff that's run about structured religions or any of those things that are very misogynistic. But the things that say treat everybody with dignity and respect includes treating women with dignity and respect. It's not being predatory. It's not watching pornography and thinking all women are there just to serve you. It's actually about challenging levels of misogyny anywhere you see it.
Yep.
Calling it out.
And so see when last weekend actually there was the hashtag was trending, not all men. And lots of people were really offended by this, right? Probably me as well. But I didn't get too involved in it, right? I just witnessed that it was happening, that it was upsetting some people, that it wasn't. And I thought, you know, I could relate it, I suppose, to the Black Lives Matters, where I would say, but I'm no racist, but I still have white privilege. And I had to go through that when we had the Black Lives Matter thing last year, that I do have white privilege. Of course I've got white privilege. So see about that whole hashtag, not all men, and then hearing you speak about the fact that we need to hear men's voices as well. Where are you in all of that and those two things?
Yeah, I think that's a great example. So it's not all men, that's the first thing. You know, I know many men have been raised differently. Let's hear those voices about how you treat women differently. Don't be defensive and say not all men. Let's call out the men that do it rather than your male privilege being the thing that's driving your ego. Yeah. So if you have that male privilege, which many men do, then check your privilege at the door, name it.
Yeah.
Don't claim it, name it, and then start to that position and actually start to listen to your sisters, your daughters, if you have them, your mothers, your grandmothers, or any other women in your life that you love and that are beloved by you and how you would want them to be treated. Well, call it out. You know, step up if you're a man. Let's hear your voices. I'd like to see men on these marches when we're reclaiming the streets saying, no, my sister, not in my name.
Aye. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's really powerful. If we go our way back to 32 years ago, and we've been friends for a couple of years now, although it feels like longer, Elaine, and when I found out about your mum and everything, and it turns out we lived literally streets away from each other, and your mum passed away in 1989, literally within weeks of when my mum died. My mum died of leukaemia, and obviously your mum died at the hands of a terrible man. Which was weird, wasn't it? It's a weird realisation to have, because we both become motherless. But with leukaemia, there's something more acceptable about that, isn't there? It just is. You know, it's shit that happened, but it happened, you know? And when you reflect on it, do you think the world, the society, police, the institutions around us could have stopped that from happening, Elaine? Was there a failure?
Yeah, I would tell a typical story of multiple police incidents where, you know, the police sent the man responsible back to our home. It was a man that my mother lived with. He wasn't in a relation of mine. It was a man my mother was in a relationship with, where he would have been sent back to our home by the police after being held for a couple of hours. They treated it as a domestic. You know, it was seen as, you know, it's not their business. Now I'm going back to 1989, so that is a long time ago, and the many years before that. So like many, many women, you know, she walked into cupboards. She went to work with bruises. I went to school with bruises, you know, because like many young people, I did get involved in the violence or trying to prevent my mother being harmed. So from those types of perspectives, I think that the institutions could have done a lot more. Even in school, I would go into school with black and blue face or, you know, scratches up and down my arms or whatever. And teachers that would say, you know, what's that in your face? And even if you dared to tell them it was something. It was, they were belting you, that's the first thing. So they had institutionalised right to harm you as well. So physically harming children was an acceptable thing. It's only this last year that we decided that smacking children was a crime in Scotland. So in reality, violence towards women, the rule of thumb still existed there within law. So the rule of thumb being, as long as that when you were beating the woman, the stick or the implement was no thicker than your thumb, then it was absolutely acceptable. So the institutions were no help, and indeed they reinforced the message for me as a young person that as a female I was unworthy and so was my mother, therefore her being violently assaulted was obviously her fault.
Yep. And it's just like, where does it change? It is, you know, my sister Helen is a family lawyer, and she deals with women in really, really difficult situations. For some women, and you know, domestic violence and a high level of misogyny doesn't come right into my life. It's not in my home, certainly. But for some women, this is just no changing, isn't it? As you say, the how many women were murdered in the early days of lockdown? How hard?
The same time last year, and the calls to helplines, domestic abuse helplines, was double what it was the same time last year. It was, you know, I was reading that in the femicide statistics around about this, and it's still men that they're in relationships with or that are known to them. So fathers, brothers, uncles, husbands, partners. I resist using that word partner, because what's equal about a partnership where you're physically frightened of the man that you're with, or he's beating you into submission? So for me, that word doesn't even have a good fit. So in reality, for women, that hasn't changed. And in fact, as soon as you pressurise that environment, and I would suggest for women in terms of class, and there has been some research done around class and domestic violence, your choices get smaller and smaller, your options get smaller and smaller, because you don't have the finances to get out, you don't have the opportunities to get out, you might know the family networks to get out, so you're trapped, you're essentially a prisoner in this relationship and maybe within this home. A lot of women are in situations where they've been locked in rooms or locked in the house, or it's a pretty grim statistic once you get into the granular level of the women's experiences, which are absolutely brutal and horrific.
So if you were to make a call to action, I suppose, about how do we, I think, you know, if enough of us talk about this, because for so long this has been taboo.
Absolutely.
I remember the first time I seen it, it was just along in South Cross Street in Govan, and I was at my auntie's playing outside, and I seen a man hitting his wife in the street, and I was so shocked because I didn't know that was something that happened. And it's so vividly in my brain just now that I just didn't understand that would possibly happen, because gratefully my father was a very good man, and so I had no experience of that. So I think there is a calling upon women as well to be aware of this situation and to speak out. Women like me and you, and all women, to actually speak out against this and not let it be this taboo, isn't there?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it can't be a taboo. We have to see it as a zero tolerance. We have to see it in the same way that we've made it a crime to hit children. You know, women have rights. They have the right to live a life free of violence and fear. And whether that's walking in the streets like Sarah Everard, you know, being abducted and murdered, just going home and going about her own business, one man took her life and destroyed that family's future with that beloved person to them. So we need to call it out. There needs to be a zero tolerance towards male violence. You know, Women's Aid have done great work in Scotland for years, and other charities around about women and violence. And people will say, well, what about men and violence? So I'm not going to talk about men and violence today, because I know that's a particular issue, and I know that that's an issue that has to be dealt with somebody who's much more aware and probably understands that particular area more than I do. What I do understand a little bit about it is that it's normally other men that are being violent to men that are suffering male violence.
So again
it's about how we raise our sons on a diet of violence and war and misogyny, and how we challenge that going forward. Let's call it out wherever we see it. The challenge around about that is that you might be putting yourself in danger. Mm-hmm. And that's how real, you know, this is. These wars are, there's many a prison without bars. This war against violence against women, and I want to call it a war, it's an undeclared war. Mm-hmm. You know, we're more than 51% of the population, and this is the fear that we have, that fear of violence, that we can't be safe, whether it's in our own home or on our streets. So I think we have to name it. We need to name it, and we need to do something about it. And it is about how we raise sons. It is about how we, you know, work with men across the board. But it's also about our institutions. It's also about institutions like the police. It's also about institutions that support women around these issues. And I know that a lot of them will be difficult places just now to do with funding and how they continue. I've seen a lot of things on social media around about different areas struggling for funding through COVID and all of that. I donate to particular charities, particularly Women's Aid and other areas that are trying really hard. We, I also would particularly donate to places that are supporting young girls to understand their worth. Yeah. Teaching young girls about safety in relationships and having boundaries, and young boys, but also teaching them how to protect themselves and self-defence, because I think it is really important that they have these understandings about, this is my space, this is my body, yeah, I've got the right to feel safe. So this is a complex issue, but what's not complex for me is the bit about misogyny, is the bit about women being treated as less than equal and being hated and therefore treated as if they're not human.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even when you're speaking, and you have had this before, sometimes when I talk about this stuff, then friends, both female and male, will say, oh, she's been a feminazi again, here she goes. And actually, I'm not being a, why are you labelling me as a feminine? What I say is truth. What I say is right. Any good person should agree with me. We should not be hitting our children, like you say, and I was involved in that campaign last year with something else I do. We should not be hitting our children. We want to live in a society where people, all people are safe.
Yeah.
And so there is a calling in all of it.
It's a similar battle about power, isn't it? Because for me, and I raised my children, and I didn't use smacking. I got a lot of, you know, because my children are now 29 and 24, so I got a lot of people saying, oh, that's not a good way to be a parent and blah, blah, blah. But actually, there was a really simple power dynamic when you come out of circumstances like mine where your mother had been brutally murdered. I didn't want to be this power figure to my children that showed them that the best way for them to do as they're told, or else there would be consequences, because I was a big person and I could misuse my power and hit them. Because that was exactly the same situation my mother was in, except she was a grown woman. Mm-hmm. She was a grown woman that was basically being told, if this doesn't work out the way I want, or if you don't do what I want you to do, then I'm going to hit you and I'm going to make you submit. Right. And she was a strong woman. Like, we always paint that picture as if women are victims. My mother would never have described herself as a victim. She would have fought back in the violence. She would have took a stand. But the fact of the matter is, he did beat her to death. She had over 100 injuries, and ultimately he took her life. And in reality, he decided in that moment, as a misogynist, that her life was no longer worth living and he was going to remove her. So for me, in reality, that power dynamic exists. And I know that I can see with your face, this is quite a scary thing for you to even talk about. It's quite scary for me. It's the first time I've actually talked about it publicly, although I've had lots of strong feelings over many years. But in reality, that's about, it's a very emotional subject, because you're talking about people you love.
Yeah. And when we shine a light, and it's part of the purpose of this podcast, the fact that you've never spoke about this publicly and you're sharing it with me, I can't thank you enough. But when we start to shine a light on that, when women listen to this, or people listen to this, and they start having these discussions, where light is shone, change can happen. But where it's kept in darkness, it just festers and it just stays the same. And so I suppose, therefore, what we've done with this conversation is we've shone a light on it, haven't we?
Yeah, abuse of any kind thrives in silence or quiet. Mm-hmm. When there is no platform for it, when it's a taboo subject, as you quite rightly said, then where do you go with all those thoughts and feelings around about it? So for me, for many, many years, I had lots of thoughts and feelings about it, and I did go on to educate myself around about many of those issues. But depending on the company you were in, you would get visceral responses, particularly from men who were very defensive of male violence. And a lot of the time, probably because they were violent men themselves, but that wasn't maybe known publicly. So I think the more that men defend this undefendable position, and it is an undefendable position, the more I'm disappointed in those individual men. And those men who are brave enough to dare to speak about it, because many of these men, it was their own fathers beating their own mothers. I think if they're brave enough to speak about that and raise their own children differently, I want to hear for them men. I want to hear about what that was like. I want to hear how they turned it around and how violence wasn't an option for them, because I admire those men and I am interested in what they've got to say and how they changed it for them as an individual and how that can change for other men. They're the hope for the future for me. I know that as women, we will have a lot to say about it too. And for me, I was a woman who turned it around for my children. My husband turned it around for our children. But I'd like to hear from those other men. So I suppose my call to action and is a call to women that it's zero tolerance, a call to men that it's zero tolerance, but a call to men to speak your truth about how you hate male violence, whether it's to men or women or children, and what you have done in your life to change that and stop it and turn it around.
Thank you so much, Elaine, for sharing this with me. I really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this episode of What Do You Know For Sure podcast. If you would like to connect with me, you can do that across social media by searching Anne Hughes Ignite. If I refer to my radio show and the podcast, you can catch those on my Mixcloud. Again, just searching Anne Hughes Ignite. And if you or anybody you know want to answer this question with me, please do get in touch. Just go onto my website, annehughesignite.co.uk, and fill in the contact page at the bottom, and I'll be delighted to have this conversation with you too. Thank you.